student achievement and school accountability. We have a number of people who have limited time periods, starting with Speaker Simmons. And we're going to switch the order. Speaker Simmons is not here. We're going to start with House Bill 2006. And Janet, if you would read the summary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House Bill 2006 would extend the sunset date that's currently on the education leadership team, would add 2 years to the sunset, making it sunset July 1st, 2003. The legislation currently would sunset 5th July 2001. In your material, you have a background on the education leadership team. We did have a briefing from members of the educational leadership team in January, so you may be familiar with that. They have produced their report. It looks very similar to the copy you had. It was a pre-release copy, so this is the final report. Also in your material from your packet we distributed is the statute. It's called Project Success for Oregon's Educational Future. So those are the things in your packet. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. Well, colleagues, we're going to have to make a quick change of direction here. We're going to recess public hearing on House Bill 2006, and we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2004. And Janet, once again, you can lead us off.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House Bill 2004 would specify some formula numbers for the student performance section of the Oregon Score Report Card, and would specify additional data factors to be included on the local score report card. The list in the staff measure summary is divided up by the first items would be on both the district and the school report cards. The second half of the list is items that would be required on the district report card. Just want to point out that you can see in the bill itself, House Bill 2004, the factors that are included in statute now. Most of the items that are in the report card are not specified in statute currently. They were determined by the Department of Education. Mr. Chair, you also have a fiscal impact. It was not distributed yesterday, but it was included at your place this morning because we received that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and thank you, Janet. With that, I see the speaker is here. Speaker Simmons would come forward. We'd be happy to hear from you, sir. And is Harvey coming forward also?
No, sure. And
Speaker Lynn Todd.
And the speaker and the former speaker.
Excellent.
I just take
reminds me of reminds me of Mike Myers on Saturday Night Live. Excellent. That all three of you could join us.
Old home.
Yes. May I ask for just one suspension of the rules? Because this probably won't happen again, and I can just take one picture.
I think probably we can tolerate that.
Thank
that
would
be fine.
Way to go, Harvey.
Can that, please? Thank you.
You're welcome, Representative.
Yeah, we all expect copies.
All expect copies.
Chair Backlund, members of the committee, thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak to you this morning, and I'd like to thank former Speaker Lynn Snodgrass for coming down this morning as well. Thank you. An excellent educational system requires a vigilant effort not only of us as legislators, but everyone in our communities, from school board members to hardworking parents. The first step in improving the education that our students receive is good data. In 1997, I was the chief sponsor of House Bill 3636, which created the School Database Initiative. It was the first effort to put a common set of educational data in the hands of regular Oregonians so everyone could see that what was going on in their local schools and make changes based upon that data. I've been very proud to see the Department of Education continue to use and improve that tool, and it is now the basis for the quality education model. In 1999, last session, I was proud to vote for Senate Bill 1329, which created school report cards. I thought this was another great opportunity to put consistent data in the hands of our teachers, parents, and others who are concerned with education. I'm sponsoring House Bill 2004 because I do not believe the school report card bill from last session has lived up to its full potential. The intent of Senate Bill 1329 was to give each school in Oregon an annual report card so that the public, schools, and parents could have an opportunity to compare the educational opportunities in their community to those being offered in the rest of the state, which created a common set of data that everyone could discuss, so everyone could use to discuss their school's efforts in achieving excellence. The Department of Education did a great job, a Herculean effort, in after the passage of Senate Bill 1329 in creating report cards for every school in the state. They gathered inputs from many groups statewide, collected data, and developed a report card template for every school to use in a very short span of time. Some of you are aware of the Cornelius Grade School issues and how the shortcomings that were pointed out in the current report card system in that situation. After receiving a low score in their first report card in January 2001, they jumped to an excellent score last January. We discovered that 64 of 151 students were exempted from taking any of the tests. Most of them were English language learners and students with disabilities. Currently, 80% of a school's grade is based on their students' performance on tests. I think that this is too high of a burden and will only cause more schools to sacrifice the assessment of their troubled students who need the assessment the most for good school report card results. House Bill 2004's intent is to change the weighting that we give assessments and put an increased focus on other highly relevant data that parents and communities need to have in order to improve their schools. You have the bill before you. New language is in Section 3 and 4. Creating new issues to new standards to use and weighting. I want to mention that I appreciate Representative Backlund and Representative Morissette's sponsorship on the bill as well. The first step in general school improvement and closing the achievement gap for our struggling students is good data collection and sharing. And this information, I believe, would empower everyone to improve their public schools. I would also like to introduce House Bill 2006, which extends the sunset on the education leadership team. The work of this team in areas of reading, teacher, and administrator quality and accountability has put a focus on a nonpartisan plan for school improvement and has contributed to the thoughtful nature of our education discussion in the legislature this session. And former Speaker Lynn Snodgrass is here to visit with you about the education leadership team and tell you why this work needs to be continued.
Thank you very much. And former Speaker Snodgrass, you wish to speak on 2006?
I will speak on 2006 when it's appropriate. I do have a comment about 2004, though.
Oh, please.
Never want to pass up a good opportunity to speak about education. First of all, I want to compliment, I'm Lynn Snodgrass, former Speaker, now just a taxpayer. I want to compliment Speaker Simmons for taking part of his responsibility and his authority as Speaker to present bills, and this is one of them that he has chosen, and I compliment him on doing that. Because of most measuring tools that we use, whether it's at home or in our business or in the legislature, there's always adjustments that need to be made, so I want to compliment not only the Speaker, but this committee and the many superintendents and school board members, the Department of Education, for being willing to listen to not only the parents, but also each other, and how to make the report cards even better. Rather than running and hiding from being measured, they have band together in trying to make a comprehensive plan. And we all know, we've all heard the stories about how high achieving schools may or may not have gotten as good of a report card as they expected, but then where do you grow from there? The low-achieving schools, hearing for the first time that they were low-achieving, and what can you do, and how can you talk to your your parents and your constituencies to get them on board to help you make the improvement. So I compliment the entire state and those members, those people that are involved in continuing to focus on our kids. And our kids are what it's all about. So again, my compliment, Speaker, for coming up with this particular plan, although I haven't digested the bill. I can assure you that if the change is going in the right direction and that's towards kids, then it's a positive direction.
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Speaker and former Speaker Snodgrass and Harvey, I really appreciate what you've done here. The biggest concern in our district is the number of students, just happened this year, who were ill because of an epidemic of flu. And I'm concerned that perhaps we need some type of, exemption or some qualifier for that reason. And apparently that, as I understand, happened in numerous school districts this year. And I wondered, what we could do or to mitigate the performance because of this during the testing period.
Chair Backlund, Representative Nelson, that was a problem in my district. The little school in Wallawa had 90 some kids absent, six that was a flu out of a high school of 120 at one point. And so the epidemic hit them very hard. I would leave it to the wisdom of the committee. The bill before you is a starting point, and I would leave it to your wisdom as how to include latitude for situations such as that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Colleagues, we're going to, we have a time crunch here for former Speaker Snodgrass, so we're going to recess House Bill 2004. And we'll call a public hearing on 2006 so that former Speaker Snodgrass can testify. So we're on 2006, Collins. Janet has already given us the summary of this bill. So with that, I think, Lynn, I think we're ready to hear what you have to say.
I would defer to the speaker first if you have some comments.
Oh, I'm sorry.
My comments are that the initial effort was a good effort. And I think it's very worthwhile to extend it into the future. The team that was put together last session and the things that they were able to bring forward were very worthwhile. And I appreciate all the work that Speaker Snodgrass did on that, and I think it would be beneficial to the state to continue it into the future, and that is the purpose of the bill, and I appreciate very much Speaker Snodgrass coming down this morning to share a little bit of time together and express both of our support for the education leadership team and continuing it into the future.
For the record, I'm Lynn Snodgrass, former speaker, current taxpayer, and soon to be grandmother. First time I've got to say that on the record, that's very fun. I want to thank you very much, specifically Chair Backlund and Representative Hobson, Representative Barnhart, Representative Morissette, and the speaker for co-sponsoring this bill. And unless the rules have changed, the rest of you have equal opportunity to put your names on this bill also to extend the leadership team's good work that they've done so far. One of the most frustrating parts of being a legislator, and you probably have felt this, is the time that it takes to get something done. When you're in the private practice or private enterprise, if you make a decision, you seem to see the action the next day or the next week or whatever your timeline was. There has been some excellent, excellent work done by the education leadership team. Unfortunately, as with most things that are government-related, it takes a little longer to get great work done. And that's the case, and that's what we're facing right now. I have not ask for any amendments to include the former speaker as part of the leadership team or any of that, but I do believe that the foundation and the framework that the education leadership team in House Bill 3633 had to begin with should continue, and to include the new speaker and to include the new president of the Senate. So again, my compliments to those of you that saw the wisdom and want to continue it. And I just want to remind you quickly of some of the chief components of the education leadership team and how they work together. And what we did is we came up with strategic priorities, strategies for the whole state, in all areas of education, K or pre-K, as Representative Winters would so aptly say, and Representative Nelson, pre-K through college. And those strategies are reading as a gateway and the importance of that. And in fact, I think that you heard about that last Friday when you had a guest from Washington, D.C. here to talk about that. Teacher and administrating quality, that is a perfect component for the report cards that we just talked about. The connections with student success and accountability for results. These are all laudable goals, and when you put all those goals together in a unified fashion, unifying form, which is what the education leadership team has done for you so far, the other end is success, thus the title Project Success. So again, I thank you very much for those of you that have sponsored this bill, and I'm hoping that you will not have a constitutional problem and this will go through as a committee and pass out of this committee into the House floor.
Thank you. I rep. Say Morissette.
Former Speaker Snodgrass, what do you mean constitutional problem?
As in counting numbers, so that you have enough of the votes.
Votes.
Oh. Votes. Votes. It was light humor, obviously. It was heavy this early in the morning.
I was reading this, and I heard constitutional.
And you awoke.
I awoke. We're early in about our 10th week, so we haven't figured this out yet.
Perhaps you haven't experienced the constitutional problem in this committee, which I applaud you, Representative Baffin, for that.
Well, colleagues, I wanted to comment, particularly with the former Speaker Snodgrass here. When House Bill 2633 came out last time, I was a little bit dubious because we had been working on the quality education model, and I thought it might be kind of perhaps superfluous. But upon further review, our thought last time, I supported House Bill 2633, and I'm really pleased I did. I think the impact of the project success is very measurable in that the governor based a part of his budget for K-12 on the importance of reading. And so we know that in his proposed budget there is a real reading initiative, and I think the education leadership team is I'm not sure I should say largely, but certainly a major part of that decision on the part of the governor. So I think that the education leadership team or the project already had a big impact, a positive impact, and I think we should continue it. So with that big editorial, those editorial comments, I'd be happy to have someone else comment if we are ready for that, or what's your pleasure? Representative Hobson.
Mr. Chair, I guess I was just questioning, are you planning to move this?
Well, I visited with Janet, and I don't think we can.
Oh, okay.
We have a fiscal impact here, I think, and so I guess we can't move it today, but if we don't, I'd certainly like to bring it back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is my only opportunity to editorialize.
Oh.
I certainly don't want to miss it.
Be my guest, but
I can concur with a great deal of what you said, with the small exception that I didn't see the light and I didn't vote to it, and I've already eaten humble pie for that on numerous occasions. And I'm delighted that it's back. I support it 100%. And I was particularly pleased when the first things that Speaker Snodgrass mentioned was the element of time. And I think that's so true. As everybody knows, I'm an ardent supporter and proponent of the Department of Education. But one of the things they don't have is not only time, but quality time away from the building that they occupy where they can think. And in addition, the number of people who participated really broadened the impact and the opportunity to get input from all those people that we always say that we want input from, but we don't ever have the time or opportunity to get that. So I think it's wonderful. The piece that I would add that I think would make it a real important continuation is that there be an intent to develop an agenda that would in fact impact the next legislative session, whatever that might be, because obviously there are a number of common threads that could be pulled together. And the only piece, if I could mix two bills, which we've already done a little bit here today, if I could take that, it might even be a topic for the Project Success folks to take a look at the report card, because I think there's a lot of room for carving discussion and those kinds of things there. So I'm delighted to be for it. Let's hurry up and bring it back.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kate Dixon is here, I think. Indeed, I see Kate. Yeah.
Chair Backlund, we'll continue with 2006 bill then.
Yes, please.
Thank you.
We've been jumping around a bit. I apologize.
thank you, Chair Backlund and members of the committee, to add a couple of brief comments to our support for House Bill 2006. I have a couple of colleagues with me today, Dr. Nikki Squire, former superintendent of Hillsborough School District, and Dr. Dee Cox, also former superintendent of the Westland Wilsonville School District. They both served tirelessly and thoughtfully on the education leadership team, and they'll bring a brief comment or two as well. I'm just going to, you've had the opportunity to hear me speak before about the education leadership team. My brief comment is to really highlight several of the comments that Chair Backlund and Representative Hobson have already alluded to, and that is that I believe the power of this education leadership team and the strategic priorities rest with the opportunity to create a leadership agenda for the state of Oregon for education. And as we worked with the Quality Education Commission and the Quality Education Model Development, we were able to influence their priorities for funding quality education in the state of Oregon. And the Quality Ed Model is a budget tool, but what needs to happen is that there needs to be some leadership direction for where do we go with that budgeting tool for quality education. And that's really the role of the educational leadership team, is to be that core group that provides the leadership agenda for education in Oregon. And so from that point of view, it creates a full system, if you will. And I also am very pleased with the strategic priorities that were developed by the education leadership team. I believe that they are of great quality, and they also will stand the test of time. Our commitment to reading is essential for a successful education for all kids. Our commitment to teacher and administrator quality, we know, and you know, that the most important influence on a child's educational experience is his or her teacher. And assuring quality teachers in every classroom is certainly an important goal. And then thirdly, connections for student success. We cannot go forward with a great educational system unless that system is built on assuring each student's success. We need to assure that our students with special needs, our students as English second language learners, our students that are potential dropouts, and our future scientists, and all of our students have a way to be engaged in their educational experience and be a part of it through their connections. And then last but not least, our commitment to accountability for results. I believe that's part of the future of the education leadership team. We worked on some aspects of the accountability effort, but we have more work to do, and it's really one of the major reasons why we need to continue our work as the educational leadership team. We have our priorities, and now how do we begin to set those standards for accountability for results? And as Representative Hobson said, maybe we take a look at how we better develop our report card in the future, and because that is a major area of accountability. And how do we create a whole system of accountability that is fair and appropriate for our children, and is fair and appropriate for the adults that work with our children? And with that, I'd like to invite Dr. Squire to provide a message from her experience with the education leadership team.
Thank you, Chair Backlund, members of the committee. For the record, I am Nikki Squire with the Hillsborough School District. And I would like to begin by thanking you for considering extending the life of the education leadership team. I was privileged to serve as one of Governor Kitzhaber's two appointees to the team, and I found it to be a most constructive and valuable process for considering key education policy issues, for creating avenues through which a broad spectrum of citizens, educators, and state leaders could speak to those issues and hear the views of others, and for crafting sound policy recommendations. I'd like to speak briefly to three aspects of the education leadership team's work that I found particularly valuable. The first is the Education Leadership Summit. As you have already heard, the leadership team planned and hosted an Education Leadership Summit last April. And that event was a first in my experience of over 30 years as an Oregon educator. It was designed as an opportunity to unite Oregonians and establish a vision-driven leadership agenda for education pre-K through higher education. The summit brought together community, business, student education, and political leaders from throughout our state for an intensive and carefully conceived process to develop the priorities that Kate mentioned. It was a remarkable day, and it led to remarkable results. I was particularly gratified to feel from the outset that we had been given a clear sense of purpose by Superintendent Bunn and Speaker Lynn Snodgrass. We listened to inspiring and expert speakers, including our governor, regarding Oregon's educational future and the four strategic priorities that Kate just mentioned. Each of the presentations was followed by a roundtable discussion, reports to the leadership team, and reflections. The product was the statement of vision and the specific priorities that you've already heard about, developed through collaboration and consensus. I must tell you how rare it was to spend a full day discussing important educational issues and to end with a sense of common ground. I would hope that other Oregonians would have an opportunity in the future to participate in such an event. The second aspect of the education leadership team's work that I would like to commend to you is the inclusive process. Not only the summit, but all of the deliberations of the education leadership team were inclusive, and they sought to bring to the table a broad spectrum of opinion, of technical expertise, and philosophy as we worked to hone what can be and often is an overwhelming agenda into focused priorities. The committee itself was balanced and diverse. Members were both elected and appointed state and local leaders. They were from both parties. They were professional educators. They were parents. They were business people. They were citizens at large. They invited and received advice from a broad spectrum of others through subcommittee work and through reaching out to other interim work groups. Our work was facilitated in a way that enabled us to find priorities upon which we could all agree. And because the process was inclusive and the group representative, and because we did reach consensus on the priorities that you have heard about, I truly believe that the recommendations the education leadership team produced represent a set of priorities that most Oregonians support. It is important to maintain a process and a structure through which we can continue to work together on education. Finally, the third thing I would commend to you about the education leadership framework is the useful product. Education is the gateway to the American dream. It's the means by which we seek not only to prepare our children and ourselves for citizenship and work and responsible family life, but also means by which we try to achieve lofty goals and solve all manner of social problems. There is so much to do and so little time, so many good ideas and limited resources. The education leadership team's product is a set of concrete recommendations for achieving specific priorities. The product can serve to organize policy discussion and to create conversations about what Oregonians see as the most important among the myriad of potential education initiatives. To continue to provide a venue for a truly representative sample of our citizens and leaders to frame priorities and recommend direction to policymakers seems to me a most valuable contribution to wise leadership. And so for those reasons, I'm here to encourage you to continue the life of the education leadership team. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Dee, if we could interrupt your testimony at this point. I see that Representative Winters has come in, and she, too, would like to testify. And we will call Representative Winters up, and then we'll come back to your testimony. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm here this morning to testify in support of the House Bill 3633, the Education Leadership Team. In the interim, I was honored to be...
Excuse me, Representative.
Did I get the wrong...
2006. It's time, yes.
2000. Last session, it was House Bill 3633. And I was honored to be a part of the leadership team last session. And in the interim, just to step back a bit and to talk about personally the process that we went through, and I think what as a result ended with I think some positive action that occurred as a result of the leadership summit. You had individuals, I think for the first time in this building, that represented the governor, and then K-12 members, the legislature, everybody coming together, Dan Bunn's office, coming together to focus on what I believe in Oregon is necessary if we're going to really have a quality education system. The discussions that went on during that interim brought to you, I think, a framework and a vision for us. We spent a lot of time talking about what we thought, the leadership thought, was important. And some of those you will have before your committee. Reading as a gateway to learning, we could all agree on. It was kind of interesting that during session when we had the debate about education, we disagreed about a lot of things. But during the summit, we did agree that there were things that all of us had in common, regardless of politics or the station that we held. We also agreed that teaching and administration quality was very important if we're going to have a high-quality educational system in Oregon. And as those of you who know me know that my big push during last session, and Chair Backlund is chuckling because the phrase was coined last session, is pre through 16. I firmly believe that in Oregon that we do not have a good education system if we leave out the preschool piece. And so we addressed that, you know, in the summit, and you see more literature that talks about preschool. The governor in his Oregon's Children's Plan has included the preschool piece. You know, we're emphasizing more in Head Start as a result of some of the work that was done there. And we also looked and talked about accountability. I think we started a process that needs to be continued. I think it was the first of what I think should be of many more discussions between the leadership, the governor, the superintendent of public instructions, the higher ed, and those who, in talking, can come together for a packet that talks about totally educational systems. Too often in this building, we only deal in pieces, and that's what has happened in the past in education. K-12 always negotiates for their piece. Higher ed will negotiate for their piece. Community college looks at only their piece, you know, and of course here I was rallying the flag for the preschool piece. And this is an opportunity for all the pieces to come together to talk about a bigger, I think, vision for Oregon. And because of that, I am again supporting, this time it is House Bill 2006. I got that right this morning. And I'm open for any questions that you may have.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winters, thank you for being here. You know, I too advocate for preschool and understand the value of it as well as even 12-day kindergarten. But would this be the group who determines that we need changes in the SIM or the CAM or the is this where that would occur?
We did not deal with that. We dealt with the broader vision of looking at education rather than the SIM, the CAM issue. That's not to say we didn't have discussion about the value of the 21st Century Act, because we did. But out of all of our discussions came, I think, the priority strategy pieces. Reading, of course, and those we could really all agree on. Recognizing that if a child cannot read, or if a child is not prepared early, that the difficulties follow all through the educational process for those children. And so if you look at the strategies or the priorities that we came up with, it was those that I think universally we could address.
Follow up, please,
follow
Mr.
up.
Chair. Representative Winters, would this be the group who realigns the English as a second language more appropriately into earlier, you know, into the earlier education, or not moving it away from our
that was not
in
that
our senior
thing that we
okay. It would not be the place to go.
Not to say that it couldn't have the discussion, but that was not one that we came up with.
Yeah, my view, I guess, is that the education leadership team came to some agreements, some very significant, important agreements, and they made recommendations, and those recommendations found fertile ground in the governor's proposed budget. I think the SIM and CAM is in statute, and so that would have to be done by the legislative action, I think.
But the recommendation, Mr. Chair, could come from the
yes,
group.
Yes, absolutely. And that
but we should lobby this group. I'm just trying to find out where I got to work. I'm looking for the arena.
I
think that probably this group can address any issue that comes before it that deals with education. That's the beauty about it. But it's the other beauty is that it arrives at some consensus before we get back into this building.
Good.
And it's because of that we're able then to put forth proposals and ideas and concepts that you already have some buy-in for. You know, when Chair Backlund talked about, you saw some of these in the governor's budget. And I think that the process lent itself to that. You don't see the rancor that we had last session, and that's a good thing. again, I'm very supportive that we continue the process that was started in the interim.
Last question, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Winters, as I mentioned last Friday when we were so honored to have Secretary Page here, I was delighted that he along with Senator Gordon Smith, he likewise agreed that, the federal funding needs to come along with the mandates, the obligations for special education and Head Start. Would this be a group who would work on that program with as a liaison with Washington, D.C.?
I think, certainly, but I think the linkage with Washington, with Superintendent Bunn's office would be the most obvious linkage to work with Secretary Page on those issues. And I think we all would encourage Washington to unbundle the dollars and to send them to us that doesn't have as many strings attached as they currently have, to allow the local communities and the state to be creative. And I see that linkage with Superintendent Bunn's office more than I do with this group that's talking broader based planning and strategies. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative. Dee, we'd be happy to pick up with your testimony at this point. Thank you.
Members of the committee. I am Dee Cox from West Lynn. I'm delighted to be here. This is my first time, although I've appeared before many committees, the first time to appear before a committee on student achievement and school accountability. I'm delighted to be here. I also serve as an appointed member of the educational leadership team, and I come to encourage you to extend the sunset provision of that law so that the law would continue to be in effect for some time in the future. When I first read the legislation, they were talking to me about serving on the committee. When I first read it, I was very skeptical. In fact, skepticism was about as broad as it could get. I did agree to serve, though, and it was a delight to do that. And in my judgment, the process was incredibly effective. Not only was the process good, I think we also created good product. But the thing that most impressed me was the process that took place. It was a bringing together, really, of the political leadership of the state in a fairly extended length of time where they could talk about the things that they dreamed and hoped of for the children of the state of Oregon, their aspirations for their children, for other people's children, and interfacing in that with some professional educators, some parents, some people off the street. So there was a very broad-based discussion with enough time spent in it so that the differences could be reconciled. And that's what happened. And I was amazed because we'd just come off a legislative session that was a little bit rancorous, as you recall, and the getting our political leaders together and spending that time talking together was an amazing thing. We came to agreement. We came to general agreement throughout the entire committee, representing quite a broad variety of Oregon people. And I think the process of putting it together caused that to happen. I learned something else. There's a great commitment by the political leaders of the state of Oregon to provide good education for our children. We had most of the elected political leaders in this group, and again and again and again, I heard their concerns that the children of Oregon be well educated. I left uplifted because of that. We identified a couple of things that I think are right at the heart of good schools. One of them was reading, and the other one is quality staff, and kind of holding people accountable for getting results in those two areas. So I feel good about what we did, but I also feel extremely good about the process of how we got there, getting a lot of diverse people together and giving them time to talk about education so that their hopes and dreams can be shared with other people is an incredibly good process. We ought to do all we can to encourage our political leaders to continue to engage in that. And so I urge your support of it. It is good legislation.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Just for my knowledge, how is this team selected?
I can talk a bit about that. maybe Kate can talk better than I could, but
go ahead.
There were certain members who were selected by the legislation, certain people who have to be on it. Then certain of the political leaders were given a choice in naming some other people to the commission. Some of them were needed to be named because of representing certain elements in the state, special education people, that sort of thing. But it was a broad-based committee, partly by legislative act saying these people must be on it, and then giving those people opportunity to name other people to it.
Kate may do that
better than I do, but that's what happened.
Colleagues, we have another unusual situation this morning. We have a gentleman who has a time crunch. I'm talking about former Representative Kevin Mannix, and we're referencing House Bill 2357. So we'll recess House Bill 2006, and we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2357. Janet, do you want to read us the summary? And
thank you, Mr.
As former Representative Maddox makes his way to the testimonial table.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to remind you that you had a hearing on House Bill 2357 on February 13th, but you now have the Dash 1 amendments that make extensive changes to the bill, and that's the reason that the bill is up for an additional hearing, not just a work session. The original bill is described in the staff measure summary, but the amendments would make the appropriation, instead of coming from the general fund, would make it a $4 million appropriation from the Economic Development Fund, which is lottery funds. There were provisions in the original bill related to retired teachers and the hiring of retired teachers for a certain level of pay, and those are deleted from the bill. The bill does still deal with new teachers, but not with just new teachers, newly certificated teachers, but with teachers that are new to a district. It makes the division of funds from these grants proportional by student population, with a $5,000 per year minimum, so that an eligible district either gets their proportion of the total or they get $5,000, whichever is greater. It replaces the definition of declining enrollment district so that districts, if there are less than 6,000 students in this school year, have a decline of 10% or more in their ADM since 1995-96. And for districts that are larger than 6,000 ADM, they would need a decline of 8.5%. You have in your packet that was distributed yesterday a revenue impact statement. The first page has a couple paragraph description, but the beginning on the second page is a list of the schools under this estimate that would receive the proportion of the grant. These are annual amounts. The school districts are listed. They're 95-96. Student population, their 2,000 student population, their decline, the amount of the grant they would receive, and then the amount of the grant per ADM. The one thing that was not mentioned in the staff measure summary, when we're talking about the new teachers, there is a requirement that they work for a minimum of 3 years to receive any of the incentives. And again, the incentives are in the original bill, and they deal with things like housing and a repayment of loans. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet, and welcome, Mr. Mannix. I know you've worked very hard on this, and I appreciate that.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Kevin Mannix, attorney in private practice from Salem. Appearing here as a free agent, so to speak. That is on my own behalf. I commend to you the proposed amendments to House Bill 2357. They address some of the concerns that were presented to the committee at the initial public hearing. In particular, they delete any reference to retired teachers. Much of that may be a subject that's warm to my heart. It's cold to the hearts of some others who might oppose the bill, and we're not interested in that kind of difficulty when we're trying to deal with novel ideas to solve significant problems. And the problem, as you may recall, is the tailspin effect. When you're flying and you get into a tailspin, you start spinning faster and faster and faster as you go down, and it's hard to interfere with that, stop that from happening. And the tailspin effect for school districts is as your enrollment starts to decline, and you're trying to deal with a community that's worried about its development, maintaining its position, it becomes harder and harder to bring in new teachers, not necessarily new to the teaching field, but bring in new teachers to maintain your staffing in the school. In fact, you have an exodus of teachers who will go somewhere else where enrollment is stable or growing because they'll know that their professional opportunities are good. Who wants to go to a declining enrollment school district, especially in a competitive employment environment, and what kind of incentives can that district make available? And the irony is, as they continue to decline in enrollment, they have less and less capability to offer incentives. What this bill does is provide an infusion of additional cash to those school districts on a proportionate basis so that they can offer special incentives to teachers to come in and stay there. Now, it's not a permanent solution. It's not a guarantee that everything else will be taken care of, but it does allow them an opportunity to bring in quality staff. And one of the things that communities deal with when businesses are looking at whether or not they want to come in and establish in that community or grow in that community is how the school's doing. Mm-hmm. And if the schools are starting to spin down, the business is less likely to come in. But if the school could at least say, We're holding our own. We do have declining enrollment, but we now have this short-term program that will help us bring in quality staff to hold our own so that when you bring your business in, you know we've maintained a reasonable quality to the system. That provides some opportunity for that community to hold its own. This bill has a sunset clause in it so that this is not a permanent long-term fix. It's something that's designed to give these communities a boost now. The formula that's set up in the amendments is designed to focus on the very smallest school districts and also to require that there have been a substantial decrease. A 10% decrease since 1995-96 is substantial, and you know, the smaller you are, the harder the impact of that kind of a decrease. For the larger school districts, we require a little less of a percentage decrease, 8.5%. But when you start looking at the larger school districts, the impact of one percentage point in terms of number of students and staff can be significant. So the formula tries to be flexible to allow some accommodation to larger school districts that really focuses on the smallest school districts. The one question came up out in the hallway a few minutes ago about one provision here. It was my understanding that we were looking at lottery dollars, and that's clear from the amendment, and two, that this was considered an economic development concept, so it is not taking out of the $5.2 billion that are being discussed as being the allocation for education. This is fresh money. The one question which arose is whether or not this comes out of the 15%, which is for the Education Endowment Fund. My reading of the language was that this is just subject to those requirements, but that this wasn't meeting those requirements. I may have misinterpreted that language, and I don't know if the administrator has anything from Legislative Council explaining that. What I would encourage the committee to consider there is just to get some clarification, because again, it was the intention that this not compete with other education dollars, that this be a specific, fresh economic development concept with a specific timeline, and that it be outside of what I'll call, again, the traditional education funding scheme. I commend these amendments to you. I think that they do the trick, except for that one little issue I raised, and that might be something that I don't know if this has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. If it does, the committee could, if it decides it likes the bill, send it to Ways and Means with an explanatory statement that it was not intended that this, I'll use the word, raid the education component of lottery, that it be a supplement, and if this language doesn't legally accomplish that, Ways and Means could always fix that. That would avoid any further delay where the committee has to wait for more amendments and the like. Ways and Means can craft whatever amendments it would need to meet the intent of this committee. It's just a friendly suggestion, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Morissette.
Thank you. Former Representative Mannix. I like the idea of economic development for rural schools. In my visit to rural Oregon looking at the health facilities, I feel that there are two reasons why businesses would not locate in the community, one of them being a lack of adequate health care and the other being lack of adequate schools. And so it is an economic development issue, and I think that's the correct way to address it. Now, one of the incentives for doctors and dentists to locate in rural areas is that they get a tax credit. $5,000 actually for a physician. I'm not sure what it is for the dentist, but that's something that I just thought of, that maybe for teachers under some circumstances as an incentive for them to locate there, that a tax credit might be appropriate, because I know there are some schools, and according to this list, that have, well, one school is 30% drop in enrollment, and I think it's almost impossible to attract teachers to a school like that, new teachers, because of their economic uncertainty. So I think that I congratulate you on this novel approach, and I think we ought to continue to explore ways of assisting those communities.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morissette, I agree with you on the other approaches that ought to be pursued, and there is a bill in front of the Revenue Committee which could be used as a vehicle for tax credits. Of course, if you tried to put tax credits in this bill, it would have to go through Revenue as well as Ways and Means, and we certainly want to avoid too many rest stops on the highway to success.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mannix, help me understand to make sure I have some of the logistics correctly. A teacher who is hired or gets a bonus, if you will, under this has to stay for 3 years.
correct.
They have a couple follow-ups, because I'm a little confused.
Has to agree, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hobson, has to agree to stay for 3 years. Now, I assume in developing the rules, for instance, if for some reason the teacher is laid off, extraordinary circumstances arrive, you agree to stay 3 years, but then there's always going to be some common sense. There's death in the family, a spouse dies. I mean, things can happen that would allow someone to be relieved of that obligation, and that would be implemented through the rules process.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, if that weren't happen, what is there that would keep the teacher there, would allow the district to keep the teacher there against his or her desire to move on?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hobson, for example, if the school district is smart about setting up the incentive program delivers the incentive upon completion of performance, or it delivers the incentive as you perform. You could parse out, say, the loan payoffs over 3 years and say, well, for each year that you're here, we'll pay off, say, 25% first year, 25% second year, and 50% at the end of the third year. In other words, the smart way to do it is to make sure that the benefits are running with participation, not all paid at the beginning.
Yeah. Thank you. Does that mean then, Representative Mannix, that this is a one shot only? They don't get the incentive for 3 years. They just get it the first year?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hobson, it's designed to be, in effect, what I'll call a recruitment incentive. And that is a one-shot deal to bring somebody in, but they have to agree to be there. And I assume they'd be signing a contract for 3 years or some sort of agreement for 3 years. And normally, if they're carefully written, there may be some delivery of benefits throughout the life of it, or the benefits could be delayed to the end of the 3 years, absent some extraordinary circumstance such as death of a spouse, that sort of thing. But that would be up to the school district to devise a plan that both sides feel is attractive.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did you do any research to see how many of these schools are already included under the small school correction?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hobson, no, I did not.
Did you do research on these schools to see how many of them are in the process of considering consolidation or perhaps should be considering consolidation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, I think consolidation, to be blunt about it, is a dirty word when you talk to these school districts, when you talk politics in this building, and I stayed as far away from that issue as I could.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more.
Aye.
Has there been any discussion as to whether or not this money would count as part of the district's money? For instance, in Lincoln County, if they end up receiving an extra $500,000, does that weigh in on their basic, or where does that go?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hobson, that we very clearly do not do. This is written and designed so it has to be fresh money, that it does not raid their participation in the education funding process. It's not considered a set-off. It's a supplement.
Okay.
And Ways and Means, by the way, would be very careful about making sure that intent is fulfilled if they are munificent enough to allow the money to be made available. But I'm sure it was a referral from this committee that they would understand that there's a stiff shot in the arm to remind Ways and Means that this is a good thing to do.
Thank you very much. Other questions? Representative Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one quick question. The 8.5% for school districts greater than 6,000, that number particular?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Starr, it was designed to be a little bit of a graduation, a step down, because as you get larger, the impact may be different. You've got more money, you've got more teachers, you've got more students, and you can probably make a better accommodation with a larger school district with some reductions, so the percentage figure was lower. 8.5% just seemed to be honest about it, it just seemed to fit as a nice step down without any firm standard for that, other than as you get bigger, you probably need a little less help.
Representative Barnhart.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is perhaps in the nature of a follow-up on Representative Starr's question. A quick look at your list would suggest that 8.5% only applies to one school district, unless I've misread it. Was there some reason for picking out that school district, or, I mean, I'm wondering if the 8.5% maybe comes because it picks out that school district. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnhart, you're going to be surprised at my answer. Actually, we tried very hard to make sure that the Lincoln School District was included, because the impetus for this idea, the information that came to us, the specific economic, deliberate economic problems that brought this idea forth emanated originally from the Lincoln School District, and not from a representative or senator from that area, from those of us in the Salem area. Hearing from folks in the Lincoln School District coming to us about how devastated they've been about the reduction. And as we looked at graduation of this, and I said, well, there's got to be a line drawn somewhere where you'd say we're going to do less for the bigger school districts. Quite deliberately, and looking at that scale, I was concerned about the size of the district and the percentages. But I said, well, if we're trying to figure out, and we're somewhere on this, we're on this line, that particular district is a good way to look and see, you know, where do they fit. And they do fit into this. You actually would have to make substantial additional changes to get into larger school districts. They seem to have been less affected. If I was here from the Lincoln School District, I'd probably try to dodge that. As someone who's not from there and no particular vested interest, their dynamics were very compelling. And I said, you know what, this isn't designed to help that medium-sized school district with these problems. And we seemed, you know, the formula should be done. Now, once we said that and ran the figures, lo and behold, in terms of size, they seem to fit there. And I think it takes a while to get into any other school districts till you go up the scale a bit. That part was fortuitous.
Thank you.
Representative Nolan.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Mannix, have you talked with or reviewed the school districts that are on this list as having more than a 10% decline in the last several years to determine how many of them currently have vacancies in their teaching positions?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nolan, no, I have not. I'm relying, and again, by the way, I've never been on one of the education committees. I'm relying on the information that I've read about and news accounts, anecdotal information provided by various rural communities. And for instance, when I campaigned around the state last year, the message I heard, especially going through what I'll call the rural half circle as you go around rural Oregon, I don't want to use the word malaise, but a sense of almost despair about reduced school enrollment. So I didn't ask specifically what's the recruitment issue. I'm talking about impressions and feedback as I went around the state about we're having a hard time bringing people into this community, we're having a hard time finding teachers, but I didn't do any statistical analysis.
Mr. Chair,
oh,
Mr. Mack, what would happen under this bill if, for example, let's just pick out Prairie City in Grant County would be eligible for a nearly $16,000 grant. What would they be allowed to use that money for if they were fully staffed in their teachers and weren't hiring a new teacher?
If Prairie City were fully, Mr. Chairman, the resident, Nolan, if Prairie City were fully staffed and they were not hiring a teacher over the next 2 to 4 years, first of all, I'd be surprised. From the anecdotal information I've received, the small school districts are running into this kind of a problem. And in fact, their problem seems to be exodus of teachers, not input of teachers. But at some point, if they're not going to be recruiting a teacher, then the purpose of this program does not apply, and their funds would go back into the pot. And I'd say bless them for not having the problem that we're trying to address.
I'll save my comments for the work session.
Well, the whole point being that if they're not having the problem this is directed at, then they shouldn't be getting the money for that problem. So this is directed at a particular solution methodology for the problem of recruitment. But I would be sincerely surprised to hear from small school districts that they're not having a problem if they have a declining enrollment with bringing in teachers.
I guess I will ask a follow-up clarification. You mentioned, Mr. Mannix, the possibility that they might be needing to hire someone over the next 3 to 4 years, and yet I read this bill to appropriate funds only for the next 2 years. Are you saying that it's your intent that they'd be able to have the money and keep it in reserve for a future expenditure?
Looking for, if I may, Mr. Chairman, just a moment. I'm looking for the sunset language, the wrap-up language.
Line 19, page 1.
On the amendment.
On the amendment.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm looking at recruitment that's occurring at the end of this biennium, and if the recruitment has occurred, that yes, they would be able to access the funds, and there are reserve accounts that then can be maintained, and the funds can be dispersed later on. The point being that the recruitment of the teacher and the agreement of the teacher to come out to occur this biennium, that the funds do not have to be expended during the biennium. So the problem would have to arise and be identified within the 2 years of the biennium.
So the grants are made. The school district either hires new teachers or a single new teacher uses those funds, or if they don't, they have to write a check back to OEDD?
No, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nolan, the way this works is the funds are not just simply dispersed to school districts. The funds are available, and they are dispersed as the school district demonstrates that they're using the funds. The state doesn't usually write checks and then say, get back to us to let us know how you use the money, not in these kinds of grant situations. I'd like to add that the time cycle, I'll call it the sunset, was put in here to see how this thing works for the first 2 years. I anticipate, too, that if it's working well and the problems still exist, that the legislature may well then decide to extend that sunset or to eliminate it. I like the idea of sunsets in these kinds of programs to test them out and not put the legislature on the spot of having to terminate them because they're self-terminating. But if they're working well, then the legislature has the option to continue them. In addition, I should point out that Ways and Means will have to make some economic value judgments about the value of this program as opposed to others. I saw the Education Committee as dealing with this from what I call the intellectual perspective. Ways and Means has to sit down and weigh the use of these dollars for economic development and community protection purposes as opposed to, say, other programs that may come to them from other committees for economic development. And that's where there will be a competition for the allocation of scarce resources. I gave you a long answer because I was trying to intuitively figure out where you may be coming from.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for not asking this sooner. If I'm understanding the bill correctly, Representative Mannix, a teacher who has taught in a district for 3 years or 4 years is still eligible for that bonus because they come under the definition of new teacher. It's line 16 or 13. Thank you. You've got your glasses on page 1.
I don't, if I may, Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, I actually have the amendments in front of me, and I don't have the basic bill in front of me. The amendment here says new licensed teacher, and you have to be employed by a declining enrollment school district for less than 5 years. It could also be a retention mechanism, if that's what you're getting at.
Mr. Mackler.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm asking is if a teacher has taught in a district for 3 years, is she or he eligible for the bonus? To me, this language says yes, they are.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hobson, I see what you're talking about. And if I don't have the full bill in front of me, so I'm being cautious right now. I'm looking at the modified language. We're talking about assisting declining enrollment school districts and employing new licensed teachers. We're saying that they can give grants. We're saying that they have to be employed for less than 5 years. They have to agree to stay 3 years. I would think you can use that both to recruit someone fresh in, but you can also use that, thank you, to hold on to somebody.
And finally, is your answer yes?
Avoid laying them off. Pardon me?
Are you saying yes?
Yes.
Thank you.
I was being lawyerly. I was trying to do the intellectual analysis if I make sure I got follow the right track.
Janet?
I just wanted to point out, Mr. Chair, that the Dash 1 amendments replace the original bill.
I'm seeing that now.
You don't need it.
Okay. Colleagues, I wanted to comment. I've, over a period of some time, like about 2 years, had received many emails and communications and personal visits from representatives of those who were in typically smaller schools, but most especially declining enrollment schools. And so I think a lot of people were looking, what possibilities are there that somehow the legislature could help those schools? And I recall the day that we met with the representatives from Lincoln County, there was an article in the Statesman Journal that morning that the Jefferson School District, was contemplating going to a four-day-a-week school day because of declining enrollments and a lack of revenue. And so kind of this to me, this all kind of came together. And so this was an attempt to actually try to do something. We'd talked about it, we'd listened about it or to it, and the idea was let's see if we can actually get something done. And so Representative Mannix has taken the lead in this, and I compliment him because he's worked very hard on it, and it still fits, from my perspective, within the parameters of something concrete and something that may be constructive that we could do for schools with declining enrollments.
Shall I step down, Mr. Chairman?
Any further questions, colleagues? Thank you very much for coming forward. We appreciate it. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 2357? Okay. Well, I think we still have some things to think about. We just, some of us just got the amendment very recently. I think we need to do some reflection. So. We're going to close. Excuse me, Representative Barnhart.
Mr. Chair, as long as you were commenting, if I could.
Please.
The thing I would note is that this is a very highly focused way of getting at a piece of the issue involving these declining enrollment situations. I just picked out a district sort of at random, and one of the ones that had a relatively low decline, Port Orford, 58 students, and I made an assumption that we're talking about approximately $5,000 per student in terms of their budget loss, which is $290,000 a year. This program would allow them an add back of $32,000 for this very particular purpose. I don't think anybody should think that this bill is a solution to the problems that small districts have. The solution to the problems that small districts have is the same as the solution to the problems that big districts have, and that's the one I keep harping on.
Mm-hmm. I think I know where you're going.
End of my comments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think the world needs to hear the punchline.
Money. More money.
Well, thank you very much. I do think we need to do some reflecting on this and more consideration. So we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2357. And we will reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2006. And Miguel Salinas have signed up and has been very patiently waiting. I thank you for being so patient, Miguel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Miguel Salinas. I'm an advocate and a volunteer. I'm not a paid staff or lobbyist. I'm just here to represent an issue that I think that you ought to consider in your deliberations and with respect to House Bill 2006. I also served in the committee, not in the leadership committee, but I was much of a representative from the community. And I found a lot of energy, a lot of knowledge, a lot of new ideas in terms of how to proceed with our educational challenges that we have here in the state of Oregon. And since I concentrate a lot of my research on Latino issues, I just like to share a couple of thoughts with respect to House Bill 2006. I think that, one, any committee that, excuse me, the leadership committee, as I understand, will be continuing, providing, of course, that you approve the bill. And I think it's very necessary to, for that committee to encompass a profile of our community that is representative of our students. Namely, we should have people of color and people that come from other cultures and languages. It's very, very important. I was also here on Friday when Dr. Page addressed the entire legislature, and I realized that comments have been made about his presentation and the fact that school districts are in need of dollars to support services. One of the items that I feel are pivotal in terms of making an impact in educating our kids, whether it be kindergarten through university, and I have had kids in, at all levels. Personally, I have a child, in, I mean a young man at the university, is the role of parental empowerment. And I saw the, as Dr. Page was being queried and confirmed, you know, for his new position, I heard Dr. Page say over and over again how important parent empowerment is. And as he deliberated, I also went back to my experience where I have had the pleasure of working in schools of high SES and low SES environments. And there's one piece of, there's one common thread in terms of successful schools, and that is you have parental involvement. And I don't mean PTAs, although they are fabulous. I'm talking about the daily relationship that parents form with a school, with the principal, with the secretary, with the teacher, to ensure that kids are getting the job done. So thank you for allowing me this time. I did want to bring out the fact that if we cannot connect parents, we can bring new curricula, we can change the way we assess kids, we can add more money, but I really feel that my 31 years of experience in the school setting, ranging from kindergarten to I was lucky enough to be at the university for a year and a half, I think that parent empowerment should really play a big role. So thank you very much for your time, and if you have any questions, I'm here to answer.
Thank you, Miguel. Questions? Okay.
Thank you so much. Very much. I appreciate it.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 2006? Okay. Colleagues, we're looking at that at the bill, and there are some dates that are no longer applicable, and they are the dates from the original bill, the House Bill 2633 that Representative Winters was discussing. So we'll need some amendments. So we will not be moving to a work session. We will bring that back when we get those. So with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2006. And earlier we had recessed House Bill 2004. We'll reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2004. And Joanne Flint, I see you've been here very patiently waiting. And we thank both of you for coming forward.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Joanne Flint from the Oregon Department of Education, and with me today is Brian Reeder, also from the Oregon Department of Education. We wanted to speak to you today just briefly about this bill, and I'll certainly try and keep it brief. I'd like to call to your attention the booklet that is being passed out. We, in initiating the report card project with the passage of Senate Bill 1329 last year, went to national research to begin the project and used extensively the data that was found in this document, Reporting Results, which is what the public wants to know. We then proceeded to go around the state, and I'll tell you on page 6, in this document. If you'll look at figure one, I think it's referred to in my testimony as chart A, but it's actually figure one. This gives you an idea of what focus groups nationally found parents wanted to know on report cards from their schools and districts. We then continued to work within the state and developed a forum that went around the state, conducted meetings, 39 public meetings, in fact, throughout the state. I had extremely good response from educators and parents and some students as well. We then received over 700 sets of written comments and suggestions through three draft versions of the report card. We attempted to determine if, in fact, the national research was consistent with what people in this state wanted to know about their schools. A comment that reoccurred at these public input sessions was that the report card should be fair and report information in a uniform way across all schools. In response, the department required that all data used in the reports be reliable and consistent throughout the state. While requiring statewide consistency contained choices for sources of data, it ultimately resulted in a report card system that starts with a level playing field for schools, which we believe is very important. Rated measures, measures that counted for the rating system required under Senate Bill 1329 include growth in and percentage of students meeting the standards, growth and percentage of students meeting standards, dropout and attendance rates, and students participating in the statewide assessment. Informational measures, in other words, measures that were reported data but did not contribute to the rating formula, included the instructional staff and information on instructional staff and performance on SATs. The 2000 and 2001 report cards have included the above data. Refinements are planned for the 2002 report card based on improved assessment data for students in special education. We have completed over the last couple of years, improve ways for assessing our special education students, and that has been a concern, I know, in ensuring that we have full participation from those students. We also have conducted a detailed analysis of some other areas, such as boundary changes and alternative schools. A major review is planned for the 2003 report card as a result of improved data collection processes and the availability of trend data. One of the things that we deal with that is a significant challenge is when we have, for example, a number of small schools and we're looking at a school, we have the ability to have a fair amount of fluctuation. If you can imagine two or three families, for example, in a school, you, as one family would move out, you could considerably change the picture in terms of characteristics of that school. A number of the data areas identified in House Bill 2004 have been analyzed and are currently under consideration for inclusion in the report card. We very much enjoyed the collaborative development process with Senator Adams and his staff last session and look forward to discussions regarding the improvement of the school and district report cards with the sponsors of this bill. What I would like to do is to just briefly, in terms of some of the data listed, give you an idea of the kinds of things that we feel we could have a discussion about and perhaps clarify. Our intent at this point is to ensure that the legislature's intent in asking for data is clear to us so that we don't misinterpret it, which is always entirely a possibility. And we'd like to make sure that, in fact, we do understand them, the request for information. We are developing better assessment instruments for our English language learners. We believe that as those come on board, we'll have an ability to address some of the exclusion and inclusion issues for some of the students in that area. We struggle with how we, in fact, can find out, especially for diagnostic and instructional purposes, how really where a student is and what they need to learn. In some areas, such as the request for data on the number of violent incidents or weapons in schools, We currently have reporting forms that are federal reporting forms that would that are not designed to elicit the kind of information that this report card would call for. We'd like to have some discussions about how to get at that and ensure that we're doing well with that area. This year, this graduating class of 2001 is in fact the first graduating class that could provide information on students exceeding or meeting standards for the Certificate of Initial Mastery. The first graduating class that will have had a chance to achieve that certificate is the class of 2001. So we've not included that previously, but we will certainly begin to have data in that area. We've been collecting, have procedures to collect it. In some of the areas, we'd ask for some clarification about intent for definitional purposes. For example, in the area of volunteers or targeted staff development. We also would want to have discussions with you about the number of students who attended school in another district and exactly what the desire for information is there. That's not something that we have data currently on, and I would just ask you to consider that when we begin to collect data, we have to give school districts notice so they can collect it that year, and then they report it the following year, and we put it on the report card the following year. So there is a bit of a time lag in data that has never been collected before. And then I would just call to your attention that, again, this is the first year that we have statewide information from the Database Initiative Project, which Speaker Simmons was so involved in, and it therefore is the first year that we would even begin to see some of the data reflected on budgeting and expenditures. And we had a pilot project previously, but we now have the ability to look at that data, and we'd certainly need to determine what kind of reporting mechanisms we would need to put in place to include that. With that, I'll just suggest that we believe this is an excellent starting point in the legislature's identification of areas that we should continue to work on. We'd like to encourage the sponsors of the bill, if they would, to sit down with some of the folks in the department that have detailed information and see if we couldn't reach a real clear definition of what some of the requests are for inclusion in legislation that would direct future report cards.
Joanne, if I may ask, as I looked at this bill again this morning, it occurred to me if we implemented many of these or something similar to these, what would that do to the length of the report card? Because I do think if the report card is real long, it won't get much in the way of attention. A lot of people won't read it.
Chair Backlund, that's a very good question and certainly attends to the concern that was expressed around the state that the information be clear and fairly simple for people to be able to understand. I think there are two ways to address that. One is a prioritization process, is what's currently on the report card a top priority, and are there things that could be moved off in future report cards? The other answer, and this is the one that we're looking forward to, is to have the information available in simple report form on the Database Initiative accessible throughout the state to anyone by the Internet. And much of this data currently is available that way. I think what we'd like to do is see which data we think could be graphically displayed in a summary format that would also provide an opportunity for people to go for more detailed information and get it that way. And I believe that that's probably the best answer to ensure that we don't end up with a report card, as some states have, that ends up being a small booklet and therefore doesn't get read or understood by a lot of citizens.
Representative Barnhart?
That's a very good point, Mr. Chair. Another question that I had. A number of these items refer to the number of, and you didn't really address this, but it occurred to me that sometimes the number of isn't really a useful piece of data. Perhaps the percentage of, or a comparison to the average of, or something like that might work better in the area of some of these. If we include it in the statute, of course, then you're stuck with it, aren't you? Would you have a comment on that issue that I'm thinking about?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, yes, I was attempting to go briefly over this, so I didn't attend to each issue, but certainly number of is a concern. We currently use things like rates, dropout rates, and the reason that we do that is because the information can either not be useful or it can be very misleading, depending on the number, the total number versus the actual number of dropouts, and varies quite a bit from year to year. Using a rate is usually a little bit more secure for a number of folks, and I believe that your observation about what we put in statute is a very good observation to consider. We certainly don't want to be in a position where we've specified something that ends up not being useful, and we believe we could work together and provide, I think, some real clear direction for the report card without becoming too specific.
As sort of a follow-up, if I may. Thank you. I mean, for example, one of the items is the number of staff that are assigned to teach in areas outside their educational background or experience. It occurs to me that in a very small district, assigning one staff person outside their area of expertise might mean that you don't really have an expert in a whole department, whereas in a very large district, signing several people outside the area of their expertise may mean that you still have master teachers teaching that subject and involved in that subject, as an example.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, we'd love to have you involved in the project. You have a great deal of insight that could be helpful in that area, and I certainly agree with you. Definitions are very, very important in data collection.
Yeah, one of the things the panel would have to do, meeting with the department, would be to determine which of these areas you already have or will soon have a statewide data collection. Obviously, you can't issue a statewide report card if there's not complete information. So I understand a number of these probably would not qualify for current or near-term statewide data collection. Please.
For the record, Brian Reeder, I'm with the School Finance Data and Analysis section at the Department of Education. Joanne did a really fine job of laying out how the report card was developed and sort of where we're going. I just give you a little more background information. The department issued roughly 1,400 report cards this January, 1,200 of them to individual schools, and 200, one each to the 200 districts in the state. UN also mentioned a more thorough review of the report card. The data included starting now, but culminating with the 2003 report card. And that review was prompted primarily by feedback that we get from parents and schools regarding what the report card, how it helps them, how it falls short in many cases, and what we've heard from them is that the report card is very valuable, but some of the information behind how we get to the ratings is not clear to them, and they would like some more of that information so they can fully understand why they got the rating, their school got the rating that it did. It's a subtle difference from providing more information. It's actually providing clearer information to enhance their understanding. So we are exploring both making it easier to understand as well as providing additional information that is currently not there that parents and teachers and administrators would find useful. And we welcome the input of a broad range of people who are interested in schools. So we're looking forward to working with the legislature as well as with school districts and parents in this effort.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart?
Would you have any comment on line 16, 17, and 18, the criteria that would require that the grade be assigned the 50% of the grade be based on student performance and assessments for certificate of initial mastery.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, I can address that to a certain extent. O'Brien may want to embellish a bit. I would tell you that at the point that we were developing the rating system, the data that we had that was the most reliable had to count the most. And we currently had the most reliable data in the area of assessment. We had data that did not, we did not have as good a longitudinal data in dropout or attendance rates. And as a result, that counted second the most. And then we next looked at participation rates on assessments, and because some of the assessments that we had were not as refined as we would like to for every single student in the system, that then became an area which we looked at third. I think that the goal indicated here for 50% of the report card being based on state assessments, actually it probably should not read certificate of initial mastery because it's essentially a state assessment. That isn't always identified with a certificate of initial mastery. We had state assessments before. The Oregon Educational Act brought the certificate of initial mastery and advanced mastery into the picture of education in Oregon. But I would say that the 50% rate is certainly a goal that we would feel very good about at the Department of Education, and we believe is probably a reasonable goal as we have reliable measures to include otherwise.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will you take into consideration then that the biggest indicator of the academic level of a school and or a district is based on their SES?
Representative Backlund and Representative Hobson, that data is in fact considered in the respect that we include and will continue to include increasingly the progress or growth of students, recognizing all students don't start at the same place. And so in order to evaluate the performance of a school, we'd certainly need to look at what kind of growth or progress schools were able to make with all of their students wherever they started. And that's, I think, an important consideration. I would mention also, though, something very interesting, and you'll notice it in Figure 1 in this book, and that was that repeatedly we had a request for SES to be included on the report cards by a number of educators, although not all. What we heard from parents and public members, public citizens, was very different, and it was a statement that said, we know the economic status of our community. We don't need to read that on the report card, and we don't want you to consider that and demographics as issues that are limiting issues for our students, and we want to be very clear about that request. So I think we have an interesting challenge in trying to frame on the report card the potential of students, and that is one of our most significant challenges in really, I think, graphically representing that. But we believe that our assessment data in particular will provide increasingly better ways to define that progress and represent on the report card how much progress or gain that school is making for every child within the system.
Representative Hobson.
Follow up. thank you, Mr. Chair. Am I right in assuming that within that part of the investigation that you'll also consider the problems that have surfaced this time due to the emphasis on growth?
Representative Backlund, Representative Hobson, very much so. And we're very, very cognizant of that issue.
Thank you very much. Do we have anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 2004? Well, again, we've had lots of things to think about. I think we're a long ways away from trying to move this bill. So with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2004, and we'll adjourn the committee.
Wonderful.